So yeah, this is it. This is it. This is the end of a year. It is not often that I have the opportunity, the privilege to literally preach a message on the literal last day of the calendar year. I didn't look back and see how often it has happened, but I have to believe that it's relatively rare to get to do something like this. And so we're going to do something special today. We are going to both look back and look ahead. We're going to look back and reflect, remember, celebrate. We're going to think in just a few moments about God's faithfulness to us over the past 364-ish days. And we're also going to take some time to look ahead. What does 2024 hold for us? But before we move into 2024, you guys know what happens today. The ritual, the tradition that has gone on since 1907. Tonight, we'll all be very attentive as we drop a large, growing, glowing ball from about 75 feet in the air to ground level in the famous Times Square in New York City, a tradition that's been around since 1907. And every year, I watch the ball drop, I see the crowds, nay, the hordes of people, and I think to myself, not in a million years. Not in a bajillion years would I want to be in the midst of. And some of you are like, whoa, bring on the confetti chaos. Nope, my couch is so comfortable on New Year's Eve. But have you ever, so 1907, think about this for a second. The light bulb wasn't invented until 1879. So it wasn't very long that we had a light bulb that we thought, you know what we should do with this? We should drop a huge collection of these from 75 feet in the air to celebrate the coming of a new year. The first one in 1907 was 5 feet in diameter, weighed 700 pounds, and was covered with 125-watt light bulbs. And at the time, that was a big deal. You are probably not surprised to find that it's a bigger deal now, literally. Today's bulb went from the 5 feet original, now it's 12 feet in diameter. It's over twice as big. It went from 700 pounds to 12,000 pounds is what the one now weighs. And instead of 125-watt light bulbs, this one today is covered by 2,688 crystals of varying sizes between 4 and 5 inches for the reflectivity, and then additionally 32,000 LEDs. So it has been improved upon and enlarged quite a bit since 1907. Have you ever stepped back to think, though, what a weird thing to do? Like, we talk to each other like, oh, the ball's dropping tonight, and we all know what that means. If you were to talk to somebody with no context for our culture at all, they would be like, what do you mean? The ball is dropping tonight at midnight? So here's what's interesting. That's not the only thing that if you, because it's easy for us to step back and look at other things and be like, yeah, that's weird. Just in this country, it's not just, so in, the ball in Times Square, but in Plymouth, Wisconsin, they have a big cheese drop that will happen tonight. Yeah, exactly, big cheese drop. And even closer to home for us here in Northeast Ohio, Kennett Square, Pennsylvania drops, anybody know? Anybody? A giant mushroom. A giant glowing mushroom drops in their town square. That I wouldn't, so I'm not going to New York City, but I might want to see that. I might want to see a glowing mushroom fall to the ground. But if you think those are, so it's easy to look at our traditions and go, oh yeah, we dropped the ball. But in other cultures, they do things that we look at and go, boy, that's strange. For instance, many cultures eat round foods on New Year's Eve because the roundness of the foods matches up symbolically with the roundness of a coin, which matches up symbolically with prosperity in the new year. So round foods are very popular to the point that in the Philippines, they eat 12 round fruits at their gatherings on New Year's Eve, probably a lot more healthy than what you might be eating tonight on New Year's Eve. The partygoers sometimes wear polka dots to continue the theme of round things in anticipation of the prosperity of a new year. In Brazil, instead, they jump 7 waves at the beach for good luck when midnight strikes, which I will say, if you're anywhere jumping waves on a beach on New Year's Eve, that's the way to do it. That's the correct answer right there, in my opinion. In Denmark, people go around and they take their old dishes and they break their old dishware on the doorsteps of their friends in the neighborhood. I don't know why they do that, but that's what they do. In Turkey, they smash pomegranates on their own doorsteps, and the bigger the spread of stuff from the pomegranate, the more pieces, the further out it goes, the more prosperous your New Year. So you really got to wind up when you crush the pomegranate on your own doorstep if you are in Turkey. The Irish believe that if you go to sleep on New Year's Eve with a sprig of mistletoe or holly or ivy underneath your pillow, you will dream about your future spouse or partner. In Greece, this is one of my favorite ones, do you know what they hang from the doorways in Greece traditionally for New Year's Eve? Good, none of you know. Onions. Bundles of onions are hung over the doorposts, right? And you're going to say, why onions? Well, it's because traditionally, onions are symbolic of luck and prosperity because they tend to bloom, I guess, if you will. Even if no one's watching, they still push through the soil. But this is my favorite part of that tradition. To complete the prosperity cycle of the hanging onions, what they do is the next morning, they take those onions that were hanging all night, and this is what it said in where I read it. They gently bonk them on their children's heads as a way of waking them up on New Year's Day. So kids, if you want to be bonked lightly, lightly bonked in the head with an onion as a way of wishing you Happy New Year. So tomorrow morning, if that happens to you, it's not my fault. It's people in Greece that did that. In Colombia, on New Year's Eve, you grab an empty suitcase and run around the block as fast as you can if you want to guarantee a year of travel in the upcoming year. In Japan, they eat toshikoshi soba, which is a dish with really long noodles to symbolize long life. In Singapore, they write their hopes for the next new year on what they call wishing spheres. And then they float these wishing spheres down the Singapore River. It's grown to be such a tradition that around 25,000 wishing spheres are written on and floated down the Singapore River as people prepare for the new year. That one I wouldn't mind seeing. That actually sounds pretty cool. In Ecuador, things are a little darker. They make sawdust-filled dummies of people who represent the worst of the previous year. For instance, politicians and pop culture figures, and then they burn them in effigy as a cleansing ritual for the new year. So there's fire involved. If you want to go extra with good luck, you jump over that fire 12 times, one for each month, to really supercharge your good luck for the new year. And last one, I promise, speaking of burning things, in Russia, as part of their tradition, before you drink your champagne on New Year's Eve, you take something you're wishing for, and you write it on a piece of paper, you burn that paper to ash, you put the ash in your glass, and you drink it down, because, yeah, obviously, that now you're like, that makes sense for Russia, probably. That seems like something they would do. So no matter where you are, no matter what tradition is happening, New Year's Eve is a time when we look back at the previous year, we look ahead at what is to come. Scripture talks about us counting or numbering our days in Psalm 90 with just one verse. Psalm 90, verse 12, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number our days. We had a healthy discussion slash debate at a recent family Christmas party about which is better, to have an old-fashioned paper pencil calendar or a newfangled digital calendar that you can carry around with you wherever you go. So by show of hands, paper pencil people, right? Whoa, there are way more of you. I'm sorry you're wrong, but I'm kidding. Wow, yeah. Calm down. So I'm definitely a digital calendar person. I know some people love the paper pencil. At our house, it's a dry erase calendar that gets wiped clean every month, and then we restock it with the things that are going on. Whether you do paper pencil or dry erase or digital, those are the ways that we count our days. We number our days. We try and organize those days. The original Hebrew in there for counting, mana, means simply to number or count. But in some instances, it can mean to appoint or assign or prepare or determine, to wisely lay out your days. Now, when we do this, when we look back, we are doing it with an eye toward evaluation. We maybe look back at the previous year and we ask things like, how did it go? Were my goals met? Did my plans succeed? Did events transpire as I expected them to? What went right? What went wrong, and what did I learn in the process? We number our days looking back and we evaluate how things have gone. When we do so forward-facing, it's with an eye toward preparation and expectation. We ask questions like, what do I want to accomplish? How long will it take? And what would the schedule look like? How would I organize, count, number my days in order to move forward in this new year? So part of what we do today is we number our days. We look back, we look ahead. And looking back, one of the key things to do is remember God's faithfulness. Lamentations 3, 22 to 24 says, because the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. His compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I will say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. These verses, specifically verse 23, it was the inspiration for a very, very well-known, well-loved hymn of the faith, Great is Thy Faithfulness. The writer of that song, Thomas Chisholm, grew up in a very humble Kentucky log cabin, but when he was given educational opportunities, he seemed to thrive every time. He quickly advanced, became a local newspaper editor by his mid-20s, and that newspaper, he also made contributions regularly of these poems that he would write and then have published in that local newspaper. At age 26, though, something drastic happened. He heard about Jesus, and he decided to become a Christian at age 26, and he felt a calling to pursue vocational ministry, so he did all the preparation and all the work, and he got ordained, and sadly, in 1903, just as he was getting started, he was actually so ill that he only was able to serve 1 year in vocational ministry, and then he had to step aside and do other things with his life. But he didn't stop writing. He contributed, as far as we know, over 1,200 faith-oriented poems in his lifetime. 1,200 poems that he wrote about his faith. And one of them became Great is Thy Faithfulness. It was in 1923, he wrote that, and he shared those words with a friend of his, William Runyon, who was at Moody Bible Institute at the time. And William was into music, so he took these words and he put it together with a tune, and they recorded that. They played it on Moody Radio, and it was heard by a young student at Wheaton College named Billy Graham. And you know the rest of the story. It was used a lot at Billy Graham's revivalistic meetings and became a staple. Today is probably one of the most well-known, most well-loved hymns that there is within the Christian faith. Looking back over the course of a year, we remember God's faithfulness. It's a great exercise to recall, great is thy faithfulness. And it's often easy to see that in the good that has happened, in the blessings that we have received and experienced. We say along with James, that every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father. But kind of begs the question, though, when we look back over a year, what if it wasn't perfect? Or what if it wasn't even good? Can we still sense the faithfulness of God? Can we still say, great is thy faithfulness? And to that, I would say it's very interesting to me that the author of Great is Thy Faithfulness struggled with his health to such a degree that he couldn't even do what he wanted to do with his life, because if you look at the verses that lead up to verse 23 that inspires Great is Thy Faithfulness, you will see that what comes before that declaration, Great is Thy Faithfulness, is not all rainbows and sunshine. It's actually struggle. Just a sampling of some of the words that happen in the first 20-ish verses of Lamentations 3. Affliction, darkness, broken, bitterness, hardship, walled in, weighed down, dragged, mangled, target, pierced, mocked, laughing stock, trampled, deprived, wandering, and downcast. That's the kind of setup that you get before the proclamation in verse 23, Great is thy faithfulness. And it all turns on the phrase that comes between the two, yet this I call to mind, and therefore, I have hope. Great is thy faithfulness. So when we look back at 2023, sure, there may be some incredible blessings, some incredibly good things that you experience that you can say, oh, great is thy faithfulness. But maybe it's true that 2023 was a struggle or there were a hardship, but you can still say, oh boy, great is his faithfulness, even yet. We invited some of you to share, and many of you did. This week, we put out a plea via email and on social media saying, hey, share with us how God's faithfulness has been evident to you in the last year. Just think back and reflect on your experiences and how you could say, I saw God's faithfulness in this thing or in that thing, and we decided we're going to compile those together, and we're going to share them with you today. Basically, on the screen, you are going to see testimonies from your church family, different individuals, who wrote into us and said, here are the ways in which I experienced the faithfulness of God. So I hope that you really enjoy and reflect on this time as you listen to the other voices from your church family, some of whom are sitting around you today, and just listen to these testimonies and hear how God has been faithful throughout 2023.
I invite you to respond with me. You can remain seated. Let's sing a few, just one verse and one chorus of this.
Great is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not thy compassions.
Thank you so much if you shared, and I know some of you probably wanted to share, and it's just a sampling of the ways that God has been faithful to the people in this church family. And I want to say just one more thing about that: great is thy faithfulness, that Lamentations 3:23. If you work backwards from that declaration, great is thy faithfulness, what do you get at if you work backwards? Well, the first thing is that God's compassions are new every morning. That's incredible. Every morning. So tomorrow, yeah. Day after, yes. The week, yes. Next New Year's, yes. Every morning, his mercies, his compassions are new. And then secondly, his compassions never fail. Not once. They're new every morning, they never fail. But if you work backwards far enough from the declaration, you arrive at this truth: because of the Lord's great love, what? We are not consumed. You are still here. And you being here is the product of never-ending, never-failing mercies of God. So no matter what your 2023 calendar ended up looking like, you are still here for 2024 for a reason and for a purpose. So what does that look like as we look ahead into the new year? Philippians 3 has this to share with us. Paul writes, and he says, "Not that I've already obtained all this or have already arrived at my goal, but I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind, straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus." You are still here, and you are still held. You're still here because Jesus still has a hold of you. Now, yes, ultimately, Jesus takes a hold of you for the long-term purpose of eternity, but I would argue that we each have short-term purposes for which Jesus has taken hold of us. Think about the author of Philippians. Think about Paul. Think about his situation. The time when Jesus got a hold of him, when he was literally blinded by the light, led by the hand to an unknown place until he was able to be healed and the scales fell from his eyes. He didn't just get taken hold of by Jesus for the purpose of having an eternal home. No, it was because there was a divine purpose for the rest of Paul's life. He would become the vehicle, the vessel, by which that good news about Jesus was spread all over the Gentile world. He became the first and probably greatest missionary of early Christianity. And it didn't happen in one moment. Look at Paul's life. It broke down into months, weeks, and days. Paul learned to number, to count his days for the purpose for which Jesus took hold of him. I encourage you, think through 2024. You are still here. Jesus still has a hold of you for a purpose. One of the things, though, Paul does advise us on, he says, you've got to forget what's behind. And maybe some of us are looking forward to forgetting 2023. Perhaps for you, it was a really hard year. Maybe you're ready to say, yep, great. I am happy to see it go into the rear view. And many times when we feel that way, it's because of a sense of a loss of something. We lost a person, we lost a job, we lost a relationship, we lost a dream. And whatever that loss might have been, a big part of forgetting what's behind is actually just grieving in a healthy way what we have lost. There's this model of grieving that's been around for 50 plus years called the Kubler-Ross model. You probably heard or seen it. It's where you move from one stage to another, from denial to anger to bargaining to depression and eventually to acceptance. And it's a really helpful model, although sometimes I think that we misunderstand it as this linear thing, like a stair-step thing, where once you get through this part, you get to the next part, and then the next part, and then you like arrive at the end of this grief model. But that's actually not usually how it works for the most part. Often you will move through a couple and then you will actually go backward. But regressing is not actually going backward. It's a way of cycling back. Sometimes you can occupy two of those stages at any one time. But to move through them in a healthy way is part of what it's like, what it means to forget what's behind. Some advice I read online this week that I want to share. If this is you, if you're looking at 2023 going, that was rough, and I'm ready to move past it, and I'm grieving something that I lost, just a few pointers. First of all, spend time with people who care and understand. Secondly, and this one's pretty simple, it just said, get out of the house. And like sometimes that can be really hard. Sometimes get out of bed can be hard, let alone get out of the house. Third, be patient with yourself. Fourth, talk to someone regularly and intentionally, perhaps even a professional, someone who knows how to listen well. And then lastly, think in cycles, not lines and stair steps. This is a great quote that I found. Grief is a series of loops. You can circle back to where you were a time ago, but still be moving forward. Still moving forward, leaving what's behind us. That Greek word for forget, it means to neglect or to overlook, but the root word that's being intensified in the language there is to escape notice or to lie hidden. And so as we move from 23 into 24, I want to tell you that it's okay to take 2023 in your hands. Examine it, evaluate it, remember it, then at some point in some way, take it and set it down behind you, so that its influence over you begins to fade over time. I think that's especially true as we grieve through whatever we might have lost, but I would argue it's also true even for our blessings. When you examine and you hold and you remember God's faithfulness and blessings, I think we also still need to put those behind, and not because they're not good, they are. Not because we shouldn't be grateful, we should, but do you know why? Because God still wants to bless you in 2024. And I think sometimes what we do is we hold on and remember yesterday's blessings to the point that we are not open, eyes and ears, to how God still wants to bless us in the year that is to come. So forgetting what is behind. But then Paul also says we need to strain toward what is ahead. The Greek word here is found only once in the entire New Testament. It is in this verse. And the root word, again, it's an intensifier of this root word, is to extend or to stretch. When it says to strain toward, it's to extend or to stretch. And listen, this is the time of year. How many of you have thought about your New Year's resolutions? Or no, don't raise your hand. How many of you feel like you're probably halfway to breaking your New Year's resolutions, right? Most of us. So if you're looking for a good New Year's resolution and you want something that is low impact, healthy, and beneficial from an exercise standpoint, you should try stretching. It's really simple, relatively easy. It doesn't require hours and hours. I read an article this week that suggests it is good for everyone, but that it's especially helpful for people who are getting older. I will not label that phrase. I am going to let you decide if you are included in the group of people who are getting older and could maybe benefit from some light stretching, perhaps. And again, it doesn't take a lot. The article I read said you just need to do it 10 to 15 minutes a day, three or four times a week. That's it. You're not devoting 12 hours in the gym or anything like that. It's really, really simple, but the benefits are incredible. It helps reduce your injury risk, and when you do get injured, it's not as severe. It can decrease chronic pain. It can enhance your joint and muscle health and significantly improve your flexibility and your balance. So for goodness sake, stretch yourselves in 2024, but not just physically. When Paul says, strain toward what's ahead, I wonder if there's this built-in, embedded idea of how do you need to stretch? How do you need to extend yourself? How do you need to be willing to reach a little farther? Or maybe this question. What might God be calling you into in the new year that is just slightly out of reach? Or what looks like, man, it's just beyond you, that if you were willing to be stretched just a little, that it might be something that you can reach out and take hold of. Here's a not-so-secret thing. Physical stretching is not fun. That's why we don't do it. We don't stretch and go, oh man, this is great. It can be uncomfortable, especially as we get started. Spiritual stretching is no different. It is not super enjoyable when we first start doing it, but man, guys, can I remind you that we are not called to a sedentary spiritual life. We are called to strain, to stretch, to reach in the ways that God has called us to do so. One of the most common uses of that Greek word in the entire New Testament for reaching and straining is when Jesus is speaking to someone and wants to heal them and says, for instance, stretch out your hand, stretch it toward Jesus. And in the stretching, there is some vulnerability when we are willing to stretch ourselves and reach beyond where we already are. But man, when we do, the things that God can do when instead of staying sedentary and motionless, we say, I will stretch, I will reach, I will strain just a little bit and see what God might do. Forget what's behind, strain toward what is ahead, and then the last bit of advice, press on. Just press on. I read that phrase and immediately was taken back to a song, 2001 song by the band Reliant K. I'm pressing on, right? And the lyrics include, pressing on, I'm pressing on, all my distress is going on, pressing on, pressing on, and I won't sit back and take this anymore. I'm done with that. I've got one foot out the door, and to go back to where I was would just be wrong. I'm pressing on. And I Googled lyrics, and I'm like, oh, that's great. I remember that song. I want a quote from it. So I did song lyrics, pressing on, enter, thinking it's just going to take me immediately to that Reliant K song. It did not. It took me, and so can anyone guess when I typed in song lyrics, pressing on, where it took me instead? Oh, good. I thought I should be embarrassed because I didn't know this, but maybe some of you do, and you're just too quiet to admit it. But it's a Bob Dylan song. Bob Dylan wrote a song in 1980. Matter of fact, I looked up the recording date, February 13th, 1980, just a few days after I turned 1 year old. Bob Dylan wrote the song, many try to stop me, shake me up in my mind, say, prove to me that he's the Lord, show me a sign. What kind of sign do they need when it all came from within, when what's lost has been found? What's to come has already been. And then he sings, I'm pressing on, pressing on. Well, I'm pressing on to the higher calling of my Lord. So whether you prefer to listen to Reliant K or Bob Dylan or both or something in between, pressing on is a critical part of what it means to not only look back, but to look forward. To press on. The Greek word that's used here is dioko. It has, again, a really clear intensity to it. These are not lazy words. These are intense words. What does it mean to press on? It's when it's mostly used in the New Testament, it's related to persecution. That's what kind of intensity this word has. Most of the time when it's used, it's about the early Christians being persecuted. When Jesus and Paul have that conversation, when the blinding light comes, and it's like, why are you persecuting me? That's what's happening there. That's how intense this word is when it's used negatively. Now, when it's used positively, it can be used to talk about how an aggressive chase after a prize. What it looks like to aggressively chase after, almost like hunting, aggressively chasing after a prize. Now, you may ask yourself, hey, you're talking about an aggressive chase, and then you show this cute little nugget up here on the screen. That doesn't make any sense. But it does. This is a Jack Russell Terrier. Dog people are like, yeah, I know. So I did not know this, and maybe you guys all do, and I was just not informed. So these dogs were originally bred and trained as hunting dogs. That was their purpose for a long time. Jack Terriers were hunting dogs. And some of you are shaking your head like, yeah, hello. So I didn't know that, right? I would never have thought this is a ferocious, vicious hunting dog. That would have never crossed my mind. They were originally bred and trained to hunt foxes specifically. Do you know how fast one of these guys can run? 30 miles an hour. 30 miles an hour. These little beasts can run faster than Usain Bolt. They would beat Usain Bolt in a race, the fastest human on the planet, and the Jack Russell's like, no, I got this. That's incredible. And they were trained to do it in hunting, to have a prize and a fixation and a focus and to pursue it super, super fast. We are called to press on, to have an eagerness, an earnestness, a passion, and a focus, an intensity for that which we have been taken hold of by Jesus. And with all that we've talked about today, the stretching, the straining, the extending, the earnest pursuit, I want to leave you with a final reminder that a life of following Jesus is never promised to be easy. But let's circle back to where we started. God's faithfulness. Hebrews 10:23 simply says, let us hold unswervingly to the hope that we have, for he who promises is faithful. Hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, he who promises is faithful. I do not know what your 2024 looks like. Neither do you. Neither does anyone around you. But I want to remind you that the one who calls you, the one who still has a hold of you, he is faithful, and his mercies are new every single morning. So let's think and reflect on a few things as we finish our time together. These questions are actually from an author speaker, Nancy K. Grace. She does a wonderful job with these, and she says, what was the highlight for you in 2023? How did God reveal himself? Take a moment to remember his faithfulness and to praise him. Secondly, what was your biggest challenge in 2023? How did God help you in a tough situation? And thank him for his presence in that. Third, what have you learned in the last year? What experiences brought you closer to God? Rejoice in his loving kindness. And lastly, how is God asking you to stretch in 2024? What can you be straining toward? In what ways will you press on? So I'm going to flip through those one more time as I stop speaking and we allow the Holy Spirit to rest on each of our hearts and our minds today.